Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to start off by correcting a general misunderstanding. It is sometimes believed that the Soviet Union does not approve of terrorism and in some way does not wish to be associated with it. This is not true. Marx, writing in 1840-something, wrote, "The bloody birth pangs of the new society can only be curtailed in one way, by revolutionary terrorism." And Lenin wrote, "The war against the capitalist society must continue until final victory is achieved. The nature of that war can and should change in accordance with the circumstances. At one time it can be conventional war, on other occasions it can be espionage, sabotage, propaganda, and terrorism. Terrorism is and always has been a recognized and legitimate weapon in the eyes of the Soviets for use against the capitalist world. And we should accept that and understand it. It is a weapon just as much as conventional weapons and nuclear weapons. The only difference is that conventional weapons and nuclear weapons are not being used, and pray God they never will. But terrorism is being used, it's being used now, and it is going to be used probably on an increasing scale. My own interest in terrorism started during the war when I found myself training troops to be dropped behind the lines, specialized officers who were being dropped behind the German lines. And finally they came to me and said, "Now you go and do it." And I said, "Oh no, not me." And they said, "Yes, you." And very reluctantly, I found myself in northern Italy, surrounded by the Wehrmacht, Gestapo, and also liaising with the Italian partisans. Now, they were a pretty bad lot. In my particular area, and they didn't really fight the Germans very much because this was considered to be too dangerous. They did, however, go in for what they called proletarian expropriations, which meant robbing banks. And they went in for proletarian collections, which from fascists, which meant getting hold of anybody who had any money, torturing them until they got the money. Well, after the war was over, some of them found it very difficult to go back to civilian life because it was a good life which they had been doing. There was almost no risk attached to it, and they made quite a lot of money. And since they couldn't be partisans anymore, they set up under fancy ideological names, and we had them in virtually every northern Italian city, Genoa, Milan, Turin, the whole lot. And there were quite a lot of them. It's not interesting what their various names were. They were, in effect, really bandit groups rather than terrorists. Now, this situation continued until about 1964, when a man called Feltrinelli appears upon the scene. Now, Giancarlo Feltrinelli was the son of enormously rich parents. His parents died when he was still very young, leaving him a vast fortune. He was a dedicated, fanatical fascist who, during the war, became converted by the family gardener, and he became a dedicated, fanatical communist. Now, after the war, he joined up with Pietro Secchia. Pietro Secchia is a rather important man. He was a senior leader of the partisans in northern Italy, and he became the director of the Italian Communist Party, party's intelligence, and also the boss of the Italian Communist Party's secret action group, which dealt with political assassination. And he set up Volante Rosso, and Feltrinelli worked with him. And Feltrinelli also set up his own organization, which was called Potere Operario. Feltrinelli went to Cuba and became a great friend of Fidel Castro. He then returned to Italy, and he started a number of bookshops all over Italy, selling do-it-yourself books, how to make a bomb, how to make an incendiary bomb, how to convert a shotgun into a grenade launcher, and how to create general mayhem. And these books were bestsellers, particularly to college students all over Italy, and they were then translated into various other languages and became bestsellers to college students elsewhere. He is a very important figure, Feltrinelli, because he also started off Baader-Meinhof, and he financed them. He also financed ETA, the Basque separatist terrorist group in Spain in the early days. He gave money to the IRA, he gave money and started off Action Directe in France, and he coalesced the various groups of bandits, in effect, into what were to become real terrorists in Italy. Furthermore, he set up the infrastructure for terrorism in Italy by organizing factories, making false documents, false passports, and all the support and logistics without which terrorists cannot function efficiently, safe houses and the rest. He also arranged for the supply of weapons, and he is a very important figure. He introduced Italian terrorists to ETA. He arranged introduction between the Red Army faction, or the Baader-Meinhof gang as it then was, Action Directe, and the Italian terrorist groups, and he arranged liaison between European terror. Now, if I can turn this thing on, which I can't, yes I can, yes, I got it the wrong way around. Let's try that. We will see more or less how this works. And I'd like you to look at this because it's quite important. He set up his own organization, Poteri Operario, and with his friend, Professor Carlo Fioroni. Now, he went underground at the end of the 60s, and he set up a bank account in Switzerland under the name of Robinson Crusoe. He continued to finance terror, and this went on until 1971, when happily he was blown to bits on his own bomb, which was a very good thing. Not, however, before he had in fact started the Red Brigades and had started Renato Curcio on the organization of Red Brigades, which were to become the major terrorist group for the next 15 years or so. Fioroni got together with Professor Antonio Negri. They were both professors at universities in Italy. They're dangerous people, these professors, you know. And they set up the organization. Now, this is really quite interesting because it's a format which is repeated over and over and over again throughout European terrorism. On the right, you have the bullet boys. Red Brigades were the elite killers for selected targets. Prima Linea, who carry out actions of what they call spontaneous proletarian justice, which means killing judges and magistrates. And you've got other smaller groups. These are the action people, the people who go out and kill people. On the other side, you have the autonomous collectives, which can, in certain cases, be a legalized political party. In other cases, it is a semi-legal political party, which is not actually recognized, which does not stand for parliament. They carry on agitation in the armed forces, agitation in the civil service, agitation in the factories, agitation everywhere, sabotage and propaganda. And they are on the fringe of the law. Sometimes they go over the law. And they are supported by the autonomous area, which is what Mao Zedong referred to as the water in which the fish swim. Now, you'll notice 200,000 Italians. That is about right at one time. They're not that number now, perhaps not more than about 75,000. These are the stupid people who believe that it is smart in some way to flirt with the extreme left, who supply them with a certain amount of money, who run errands for them, who help them in various ways. And there were quite a lot of them in Italy, and still are. Now, on the other side, you will find terrorist groups in Milan, the Red Brigades in Gap, Rome, the 22nd of March, anarchists and Red Brigades, Padua, Proletarian Justice, Turin, Faro, ML, Gap and Red Brigades, Naples in the South, NAP, neutralized by the police, happily. Armed Proletarians of Communism, Armed Worker Cells, Revolutionary Guards, Fighting Communist Cells, and some nearly 200 others, which can be loosely described as sort of pop and mom groups. It's good business being a terrorist. I mean, one good kidnapping and you're set up for life. The groups on the right are the Movimento Popolare Revolucionaria, which was active in the beginning of the 80s and now has more or less phased out. And NAR, which is thought to have been responsible for the outrage of Bologna railway station, but this has never in fact been proven. The Red Brigades are alive and well. There is a great deal of terror still in Italy. It is not comfortable living there. My cousin has two little girls. They go to school. The children, about 130 children in this school. And in the last 4 years, 9 of them have been kidnapped. That's 7%. You'll get them back if you pay up. It's usually about $150,000 they ask. If you don't pay up, the children are killed and cut up and fed to the pigs. The Red Brigades are dangerous. They are, as I say, alive and well. They have, to some extent, been broken up, but they are coming out of prison again now, and they are very much in evidence, and you see them, or see the actions by them, almost every day. I now want to go on to Spain. I keep on doing the wrong thing, don't I? Let's try that. Oh well. Now, the principal Spanish terrorist group is ETA. It was a nationalist organization, and it was a staunchly conservative and right-wing. But this changed. Now, we should remember a rather important date. It's 1964. In 1964, the Supreme Soviet came to a decision to support terrorism worldwide, even when they could not control it, because they felt that this would, in the ultimate, and in some way or other, contribute to the destruction of capitalism. And immediately in 1964, they increased spending in the Soviet Union on terrorism by 1,000%. This meant the construction of a large number of terrorist training camps, and in Cuba, of course, the building of the first really big complex of international training camps. And to these, ETA sent their first ETARAs in 1964, paid for by Feltrinelli, Giancarlo Feltrinelli, who paid for them to go and arranged it. And gradually, ETA changed in its political color. It ceased to be a separatist nationalist group, and it became entirely Marxist, and exactly the same thing happened to the IRA. Again, you see the same format. On the right, the bullet boys, the people who go out and kill people. Comedy Stack, Autonomous Commanders, Soyak, and Boyak. On the left, the political group, and here you've got a legalized political party which is actually standing for the Cortes. And I don't think they've actually got a member into the Cortes yet, but they certainly will. They are dangerous. ETA has already killed quite a number of Americans this year. They blew them up at Torrejon, outside Madrid, at a cafe there. They've blown up the pipeline there, and they are a dangerous lot. They were killing about 130 people each year, senior Spanish military and police officers in the main, but they also kill other people as well. And this year, particularly, NATO has been one of their main targets. On the left, you will see the other Marxist groups, GARI, which operates mainly in France over the mountains. My wife and I were in the Pyrenees in June, and the frontier is completely open. There's no control whatever. You can pass from Spain into France without going through any form whatever of control. It's completely open if you know the high mountain passes. You'd drive a car through, you don't have to walk. Villazurta, that is also active in France, and you don't have to worry too much about that, or about the Catalan separatists, or the Andalusian separatists. On the right, we have these various terrorist groups, and they really only kill ETA. So again, you don't have to worry too much about them, because they have never been known to kill foreigners. Portugal. Yeah. Operation Leo. This was a tremendously big operation which they hoped to achieve immediately after the Portuguese Revolution in 1974. They imported virtually an army of terrorists. 2,000 terrorists came to Portugal, and the intention was to support a communist takeover, which was going to take place the next year. They came from all over the world, from Germany, from Scandinavia, from Central America, from South America, from Italy, from Spain, and so on. I actually used to go and look at them training on the south side of the river. The revolution in November of 1975 failed, largely due to the fact that the Portuguese Air Force remained loyal, and these people were dispersed. They vanished. Some went to Africa, some went to various other European countries. But Major Captain Pontilas Oliveira Carvalho remained. I first came across this chap in Guinea. He had a terrible allergy to the sound of gunfire, so they put him sending pilgrims to Mecca, which was more to his liking. He became a great hero of the revolution and was immediately promoted from captain to brigadier general and put in charge of a COPCON, which was a security police. And they used to go, they were the dirtiest soldiers I've ever seen in my life. They were quite unbelievable. And they traveled about in trucks with rusty weapons, terrorizing people for a bit. And then the government got fed up with them and kicked him out and sent him back to the army as a major. So he became a terrorist. And he set up with his girlfriend Isabel do Carmo, who had jumped the gun, and she'd started her own terrorist organization, Proletarian Revolutionary Party, and for a bit they worked together. But she was arrested, and quite a lot of her people. Then he was arrested, and most of his people, and they were all thrown into prison, and they should have been tried this year. But being Portugal, they all escaped, and they're all back in circulation again. Please note, again, the bullet and the ballot. This is a legalized party. Again, the same format. Now, do not entirely discount these people, because they are quite dangerous. They carried out various acts of terrorism this year. They attacked the NATO fleet in Alcantara Harbor. There were four American warships, two British warships tied up in Alcantara Harbor, and they fired five RPGs at the fleet. And believe it or not, they missed with all five. This astonishing achievement really is one of the more remarkable things that they've ever done. But they have, in fact, done better than that in the past. They did actually blow up the base at Beja, the German Air Force base at Beja. And they blew up 19 cars, and they hurt quite a few people. They've blown up several embassies. They've blown up the NATO pipeline on several occasions. They've killed quite a few people. They are quite dangerous. And last year, they hosted a general meeting of all European terrorists, ETA, Red Brigades, Red Army Faction, Action Direct, Fighting Communist Cells, IRA, the lot. And they hosted this in October, November of last year, and that is when they came to the decision that 1985 would be the year to attack NATO. And so far, we've had about 138 attacks on NATO targets this year. Quite a number of people have been killed, and quite several million dollars worth of damage has been done. Now, I want to go on very quickly to the training camps. I've already mentioned Cuba. I'd like to go back and just say, in Russia itself, there are very many. In East Germany, in Czechoslovakia, in Romania, in Hungary, there is one. In Bulgaria, and behind the Iron Curtain generally. More importantly, perhaps in Cuba, there are several. And then in Libya. In Libya, we have quite a few. One at Tobruk, one at the Bay of Ras el Halal. Now, one of the most beautiful bays in the world, the Bay of the Crescent. I know Libya very well. It's been quite a lot of time there. And here they teach underwater tactics, how to stick limpet mines on ships. And it is here that the people who murdered Lord Louis Mountbatten, his 14-year-old son, and Lady Brabourne, they were trained there. And the device which kill them came from there. The Wadi Kuf, Hebache, and the old Turkish fort on top of the Tokra Pass, and the double trigger device which killed my great friend Erin Neve came. It was a Czech device, but it came through Libya. It may also interest you to know the Colonel, Colonel has got a number of fast torpedo boats, about 120 of them in all. These are remotely controlled, and they're capable of a speed of about 35 knots. Loaded with dynamite or loaded with explosive, they are not really dangerous against fleet units, but they would be deadly against merchant shipping, and they are already in position in the Libyan ports along the Jebel Akhda and down the Gulf of Sirte. Moving along, we come next to the Yemen, the South Yemen, and here we have got what in effect is a Russian province. Here, terrorists are trained by very highly skilled East Germans, Czechs, Palestinians, Arabs of different sorts, and Cubans. It is an advanced training school, and people there are trained in bacteriological warfare, in chemical warfare, in the use of Strela missiles. This is a handheld heat-seeking missile similar to Red Eye. The people who come out of this school are very tough indeed and very dangerous. And quite a lot have come out of the school. Moving on, we come to Iran. Now, I would draw your attention to number 4 down the list, the special course for foreign women. There are 300 in training there at the moment. We have identified 4 certainly, and possibly another 2 as Americans, 6 as British, a certain number as Northern Irish or Irish, several, quite a few, as Central and South Americans, some others as Europeans, and the rest are Asians and Africans. And the curious thing is that this is actually under the sponsorship of the wife of the Iranian Prime Minister. I mean, the thing is really rather extraordinary, isn't it? I draw your attention also to the number 1, where there are 1,000 in training. To number 3, a 4-year course on suicide missions and hijacking. This is not just peanuts. And in all, there are 12 of these training schools in Iran, and they are turning out literally thousands of highly trained terrorists, some of whom are fanatics. And when you're dealing with fanatics, we are really in deep trouble. And in this connection, I would like to mention to you something which perhaps you don't know. In the war against Iraq, the soldiers, the Iranian soldiers, are being given a little green plastic key which they hang around their neck. This little key is actually made in Taiwan. It is the key to paradise. And if they are killed, they use their key for opening the door of paradise. Well, now, if you believe that, you can believe anything. But they do believe it. And this is the measure of fanaticism, and we have really got to understand this. And we've got to understand that the pretty girl, who may be one of our own nationals, who comes up to a sentry or goes up to an embassy, either driving a car or on foot, may be loaded with dynamite and perfectly ready, willing, and anxious even to blow herself and you to smithereens. It's something to think about. Very quickly, the Lebanon. Amal, it means hope. There are about 12,000 of them. Nabil Berri, he is the Minister for Justice in the Lebanese government. Another wing, Hassan Husseini, he's the Speaker of the Lebanese Parliament. These are the leaders of Shiite Amal. Hassan Husseini. Then Iranian Amal, which is different, and there are about 1,300, and they are based on the Iranian Pasdars, who are the Revolutionary Guards from Iran. And they are controlled directly by these people from Tehran. Fikri, who is the head of the Revolutionary Guards, the Iranian ambassador to Syria, the head of Hezbollah in Iran, the Party of God, and the head of the terrorist training center, Isfahan. Hezbollah itself, the Party of God, these are the people who took the Russians. Now, they are 40% Sunni Muslims, not Shiites, and they probably hate the Russians only one degree less than they hate the Western Europeans and America. And these people are not receiving any sponsorship, of course, from the Soviet Union. And they want to see the whole world as an Islamic world. They were being shelled with Russian shells by Russian guns, which had been supplied from Russia through Syria. And hence they took the Russians. And it's just as easy as that. It's one off. Hezbollah are fanatics, all of them. They beat themselves with stones until the blood runs, and they are quite a tough lot. There are at least 4,000, maybe nearly 6,000. Their training camp is in the Bakar Valley, and they have armored cars, they have armored troop carriers, and they have artillery. They are controlled by Sheikh Fazlullah, but ultimately by this man, Hussein al-Masadi, and directly from Tehran. The rest, as you can see, you've got Islamic al-Niwa, the Syrian Socialist Party, the Ba'ath Party, the Assad Brigade, the anti-Arafat people, the Lebanese National Army, the pro-Arafat people, the South Lebanese Army, the Druze Militia, and so on and so on. I mean, it's a sort of snake pit which we should have nothing to do with. Well, gentlemen, that deals more or less with that situation, and I now want to talk about America. I've been talking largely about Europe and the Middle East. Now, I don't want you to think for a moment that you are immune. You're not. You are the ultimate target. You are the ultimate target for the Marxist, who have made no secret of it, that the United States is the homeland, the heartland, and the ultimate target of the Marxist attack. You are also the ultimate target, the great Satan, of the Islamic fanatics. So it will come, and it will come probably very soon. I expect something to come very soon indeed after the recent events of last week. And there are various possibilities. I mean, I think possibly an American aircraft may be hijacked and all the passengers killed. Well, since I'm traveling back on Monday, TWA, this is not a very happy thought. Also, I am not very happy with the idea that there could be an attack on the president. It's the sort of thing they try to do. And I'm sure that they will try something. Beyond that, you have got a very dangerous border. The political situation in Mexico is not a very happy one. The economic situation in Mexico is very shaky, and the earthquake has not made it any better. Now, should there come a change of government in Mexico, either induced by conditions in Mexico itself or conditions emanating from Central America, you are in trouble because you have the Rio Grande and you cannot easily close that frontier. It's too long, too difficult. Thousands of people cross it backwards and forwards each year. Now, I want to give you three possibilities of what they could do. Let us bear in mind that terrorism is a weapon which costs the enemy nothing, or almost nothing, and it can be very damaging to you. It is highly cost effective. Let us say one man who crosses the Rio Grande and he gets a job at a meat packing plant in Texas, and he puts a botulism in the meat. Now, we know they are being trained to do this. We know that. He will not only kill large numbers of people, but he will destroy the meat business in Texas. That's one possibility. Another possibility is anthrax. There are various cultures for anthrax, and in fact we experimented with it during the Second World War, and in 1943 we put down anthrax on a small island off the west coast of Scotland. Earlier this year a party went back in protective clothing and they discovered that this anthrax is as active today, 42 years later, as it was when it was put down. Nobody can land on that island without heavy protective clothing. An anthrax culture is fairly easy to make. All you need is a pickup truck and a blower and a nice, warm, muggy day. And you drive it through the town with your blower on and you blow out the culture and you kill an awful lot of people. The third possibility. We know they're being trained in the use of anthrax, specifically that in the South Yemen. The third possibility. The Strela missile, handheld, ground-to-air, heat-seeking missile, can be fired through the sunshine roof of a car. Now, at the end of very many runways, a mile, 2 miles, 3 miles beyond the end of the runway, there's a road which runs across it. A car can stop there, open the roof, and as the aircraft takes off and comes over fairly low, fire the missile and drive on. Extremely difficult to stop, very difficult to catch the people who did it, and very effective. Now, I think it is not very productive to go on suggesting other possibilities of mayhem. But you can certainly think of others yourselves. And this country is wide open for it. And I think it is coming to you. Now, I would like just to mention one or two things which we might do, possibly, to help ourselves. The first thing is, I believe we need